For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
So we come together in this Zendo and in the Cloud Zendo as a practice body. And today is Father's Day. You know, I had a tendency to kind of ignore it because it's kind of made up, but so is everything else in this world. But I would like to extend my best wishes to fathers and parents. Somehow, they seem to have a role in bringing us into the world. Parents, ancestors bring us to this moment and are with us in this moment. My own father died in 1981. So it's been a long time since I've been present in the flesh with him. But it's been on my mind. And my father was very curious, open, energetic, hardworking person. Nothing like me. And he never read a book, and he didn't graduate high school, but he built things with his hands, like including buildings. He built our family home and our family hardware store, designed it and built it brick by brick, terrazzo floors throughout. And he also built gas guzzling engines. He had no problem with that, including lawnmowers and race cars and other things. Drove around in a Cadillac sedan DeVille and a Jaguar. And we even had a Pinto car for some reason. He was interested in the engine. And, you know, from behind the counter and in the aisles of this hardware store, he met and helped a lot of people. Anyone who came in, he had a really nice quality of just meeting everyone as who they were. Very unusual, I think, for a person of man of his generation. And I think in retrospect, working with him behind the counter, which was in the aisles, you know, you'd have to put things away, nails and screws and all sorts of things, fertilizer, household items, pails, hammers. And sitting next to him during building projects, you know, like a little assistant, and doing this since I was young, at least 3 years old, kind of like a Montessori school. I think that was my earliest Zen training. And, you know, we had kind of a monastic schedule. Our hardware store is open 6 days a week, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And it wasn't like, you know, you had to go with the key and open the door and turn on the lights, just kind of like what I do here. And by the way, our house was right next door to the hardware store. So kind of like right above the Zendo. I'm like, I can't believe this. And sometimes the store is open 5 days a week. You know, if there was a hurricane, people needed to come and get supplies. My parents were once in the Keys. I was like 10 years old, and they called me up on one of those telephones and were like, we're down here, but open up the store. My grandmother was taking care of us, but like she couldn't do it. So I got the key, opened the store, batteries, flashlights, masking tape, all that kind of stuff. And he was full of energy. So I'm grateful to the gifts, especially this precious life. And believe it or not, Zen and Buddhism has a long roster of like patriarchs because they're mostly male. Buddhist ancestors that form a lineage. So these are my lineage papers called Kachimyaku. They start with Buddha and go all the way through Indian ancestors to Bodhidharma, our Chinese ancestor, you know, down to Suzuki Roshi, Dogen and Suzuki Roshi. Dogen's here someplace. Some of you can see this thing. But guess what? Hogetsu, right down here, the last one, only identified female-bodied individual. That's a heavy burden to carry, bodhisattvas. But nonetheless, it's just the way it goes. And I'm going to say a little more about lineage. Maybe I'll just like have it hang out on your cushion. Mm-hmm. But maybe don't step on it. And as Zen flowers and evolves, as our school flowers and evolves, our Soto Zen school in this country, on this land, you know, I pray that our Zen lineage broadens to embrace ancestor parents of all identities, not just stuck in a binary of mothers and fathers, and kind of, in parentheses, straight people. I can only hope that. It is happening, of course, as we speak. And you know, heritage and lineage, parentage, you know, these are complex, difficult, and wondrous aspects of human life. You know, sometimes we say we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors, past ancestors, current ancestors, future even. And you know, as cloud dragons and ground dragons were woven into this kind of tapestry, whether we know it or not, whether we've received it, this is given when one receives the Bodhisattva precepts, lay or priest, but it's embodied. It's embodied in us when we chant the names of ancestors, which we do, but also when we read their stories and interact with each other. You know, they say that we're 3 pounds of, you know, bacteria and fungi and other things living in our body, but we also probably have some measure, some mass of these Zen ancestors in our bodies. And Zen practices, including and examining these stories that we tell, including and embracing the causes and conditions of this life completely. And examining thoroughly the ground we stand up in this moment. You know, Zen embodies a great question, a great Buddhist question. Who are you? Who is standing in front of me, as our good friend Bodhidharma was asked? So this question flows in the blood of our Zazen body. getting a little reflective on Father's Day, aren't I? So during the Dragon spring practice period, this intensive practice, we explored the teachings of three modern women Zen ancestors. None of their names are on my chart, at least, but they're my aunts and cousins. And today, in honor of Father's Day, and also recognizing this moment in our land, I'd like to raise up two important male American San Francisco Zen Center great teacher ancestors in our Suzuki Roshi lineage, both still living, but quite old, and I would say not far from the end of this life, as they knew it. One is Richard Baker Roshi, and the other is a man named Michael Wenger, who might not be so... Do you know Michael? who might not be so familiar to some of us. He now lives at Enso Village. And was a student of Mel Weitzman, who received Dharma transmission not from Suzuki Roshi, but from Suzuki Roshi's son. So I tell this little family story because, you know, Suzuki Roshi famously offered Dharma transmission to Richard Baker when Suzuki Roshi was about close to death in, I think, 1971. And Richard Baker became abbot and leader of San Francisco Zen Center for quite some time. But I think about this now, and I think Richard Baker came to Zen Center like in the very early 60s, and within 10 years, he had built this monstrous organization and became head of this quite large establishment with, I think at that time, at least two, if not three, training temples and hundreds of students working in all sorts of enterprises, you know. But his son, Hoitsu, also offered Dharma transmission to some of Suzuki's students, and one of them was the founder and abbot of Berkeley Zen Center, Mel Weitzman, who died not that long ago. And Michael Wenger was a student of Mel's. Many people, like Norman Fisher, other people were students of Mel's. My Zen grandfather, Reb Anderson, who many of you know, was actually the Dharma heir of Richard Baker. But I thought of Michael Wenger because he is the Dharma father of Darlene Cohen. So this is how that works. And when I was thinking about Darlene, teaching about Darlene and immersing myself in teachings, I said, I want to kind of, you know, she studied with all these people, Suzuki and Baker and all these people, but, you know, it was Michael who offered her Dharma transmission. And I said, I want to know something about him. So I found a book that he wrote. And if anybody's familiar with this, 49 Fingers. It was originally 33, but it got reissued with a few more fingers, 49. This is a collection of modern American koans or teaching stories. So, you know, these teaching stories or koans are these kind of, quote, public cases or precedents, maybe, Zen precedents of interactions, often between students and teachers, but not always. But they're held up as vehicles to help us move past dualistic thinking and also are part of the DNA that we absorb as Zen students from our ancestors in these stories, these words, these spoken words that become alive in our practice. And in the foreword to this book, Michael Wenger's teacher, Mel Weitzman, writes, that koans, these teaching stories, help us see more clearly how our ordinary life situations and encounters afford us the opportunity to recognize our boundless essential nature seen through the lens of the most ordinary events. The ordinary eye, Mel says, is the non-discriminating Buddha eye, allowing ordinary and holy to disappear in the pure activity of seeing, quote, as it is. That's seeing thusness. I'll translate thusness as it is. And this is the Dharma that's transmitted in our practice, in our zazen. So that's a little background to a teaching story. But the story that popped up for me and that I've been chewing on, I've been wanting to talk about this for a long time, came to me from this book, but it also came to me from Lisa Hoffman, who is a student of Darlene Cohen's. So you see how that goes. And who will be here today. I think Wade and Mike are going to collect her and her wife at the airport. And then she's going to receive an Okesa as a gift from some sewing teachers here on Tuesday evening at 6. It's a short ceremony, but you're welcome to witness it. And here or online. And then Lisa is giving a talk, a half-day sitting, offering a half-day sitting on Saturday morning. So sign up soon if you want to get in on that. It's really lucky to have Lisa come here at this time. So the story that I'm going to bring up encourages us to examine how we're responding to the call of the present moment. And it's entitled, The Brown Telephone. Now, some of you maybe haven't seen like a telephone, you know, but there were these weird devices. And you know, you put the receiver to your ear and had this dial, you know. Before even push buttons, it was like this rotary dial, had a cord on it, you know, and made out of like hard plastic, I think Bakelite or something like that. But anyway, this is called case number 3, the Brown Telephone. And the case is this. Richard Baker told the assembly, so he's a Dharma teacher with all these like Zen students, packed probably in the Zendo, and this is what he tells the assembly. I dreamt I was trying to solve a problem, and a brown phone kept ringing in the background, distracting me. Finally, annoyed, you know, it's like, I don't want to answer the phone, it just kept ringing, right? Finally annoyed, I picked it up, and the voice on the other end told me the answer to the problem. I'll read the rest of this and then make some comments, and then you can share your impressions of this. But the commentary goes to say, so this is traditional that somebody who's translating or collecting the stories makes a comment, and other people or ancestors are making comments, and then this gets collected in the collection as part of trying to grok or work with these teachings, this little story. So it says, Zentatsu Richard Baker is a disciple of Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. So this is really nice. When you read this, Michael Wanger in these commentaries is telling us a little background on our modern Zen ancestors and some of what went on in that time, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, very early 2000s, it gives you really nice background. So he explains that Zentatsu is a disciple of Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. He succeeded Suzuki Roshi as abbot of San Francisco Zen Center in 1971 and resigned in 1983, in parentheses, this isn't in the commentary, but in quite a scandal. Says he now, Zen Tatsu, has founded practice places in Crestone, Colorado, and Germany. Isn't that great? You get kicked out of one place, and then these beautiful places in Bavaria, one in Bavaria and one in Crestone. Unbelievable. And it says, this dream was from his early practice years. So I just love that. You know, early in practice, when you've got all that practice energy and you're working hard and you're finding your seat and you're struggling with so much, and your dreams get filled with the Dharma. Actually, my dreams are still filled with the Dharma, so I'm still very much a beginning student. I'll confess that. But Michael then makes a different kind of comment, this kind of opening comment, which is, so what is important? What has to be dismissed? Is your meditation practice, is your zazen, a relief or distraction from your daily life? You know, like, I don't want to think about cleaning the temple. I want to sit more zazen. I've heard that before. Is your daily life a necessary but unwanted adjunct to your daily meditation? In the famous Gestalt projection test, do you see the old woman or the young girl? Remember that? That's like, you know, what do you see? It's hard to see both of them at once, but what is the foreground? And then he says this great thing, Bodhidharma is watching closely. So already in the, and then he goes on to say, Ehe Dogen says, take the backward step that turns your light inward. So just in this, you know, tiny commentary, he's talked about 1, 2, 3, 4 teachers, all the way back to these founders. So this is kind of masterful on Michael's part and so unpretentious. So Bodhidharma, the one who said, I don't know, but not out of ignorance, out of deep knowing. Anyway, then Michael offers his comment. He said, don't let your practice block out your practice. Don't let your zazen get in the way of your zazen. Do you ever have this? Don't let your, I would say, I'd add to that, don't let your idea about your practice get in the way of your life, of meeting this moment. So then, as is typical in these collections of these teaching stories, someone or several people write kind of a poetic verse of some sort. And here's Michael's, whose Dharma name is Dairyu, Great Dragon. So maybe he's connected to us in some mysterious way. His verse is, ruled by picking and choosing, a distraction may be to the point. Bodhisattvas appear everywhere. So I constantly encourage you, make your own little commentaries, make your own little verses on things that you're practicing with, things that you're studying with. And this koan, when Richard Baker told the assembly this, I dreamt I was trying to solve a problem. A brown phone kept ringing in the background, distracting me. Finally, annoyed, I picked it up, and the voice on the other end told me the answer to the problem. So this, you know, you could say on the very surface level is about like working with annoyance and distraction, waking up to it. But I think it also is, how do we answer the call of this moment? How do we respond to the cries of the world? You know, some dragons who I know have been unsettled, maybe annoyed or distracted by the very painful, sad, and dangerous political moment we're in, ended up meeting up downtown at a rally. You know, their answer is some kind of call from that discomfort, you might say. And this also speaks to the answer is always in front of us. Sometimes it's really trying to tell us something, and we are like, no, I think I'll ignore it. You know, do you ever do that? I think I'll just ignore it, you know. And it still will keep ringing. And the more you try to ignore it, the louder the ring. And the more you have to, like, do lots of stuff, like, you know, put cotton in your ears or blinders on or, you know, go wild with some kind of intoxication event, you know, to try to not listen to what's right in front of you. So I like these stories because they're easy to understand, and we don't have to know foreign languages and ancient foreign languages and the cultural context of something like the Chinese that many of these were written in. But also, we're just like these people, and they're just like us, you know, in the Ehe Koso Hatsu Ganmon. Buddhas and ancestors of old were as we. We in the future will be Buddhas and ancestors. Awakening Bodhi mind. We are one Bodhi mind. So this is how bodhisattvas appear everywhere in this world. And that's maybe enough from me, but I do want to just say thank you, Baker Roshi, great ancestor. Thank you, Milt Weitzman, great ancestor. Thank you, Michael Wanger, great ancestor. Thank you, Darlene, great ancestress. And soon we'll be able to thank Lisa Hoffman in person. So thank you, wonderful dragons, and share your reflections or any experiences you'd like to. Or comments, or verses. Mike Bodhisattva.
I really thank you for sharing that case. I enjoyed it. It reminded me of an episode of Twin Peaks, where there's always, or often, in, there's these little moments where someone's trying to wrestle with the problem of, you know, what's going on. And suddenly we're taken to this red room, you know, where everything is weird and bizarre and backwards. And, you know, this image of a phone that just won't stop ringing immediately took me to that red room where whoever happens to be there chooses to ignore it for a while until they just get sick of it. And when they pick up the phone, it's something incredibly cryptic. But somehow it leads them to solve the problem. Which I thought that was a lovely, lovely image. I've also been thinking about this talk, this idea of lineage, thinking about my own parents. And I think about, for example, my mom, her father was a carpenter. And I think about how crafty my mom is still to this day. You know, she's hauling out dressers to her garage and refinishing them and painting them and building things, and which I think is really wonderful and impressive. And how she got that from her father, who built the house she grew up in. So, her father also died in 1981, for what it's worth. And I think about my own resistance to lineage. I think there is something in my own upbringing, which had nothing, I don't think, had anything to do with a dislike of my own parents, but I think some desire to be seen as unique or stand out. And so this idea of kind of the transference of Dharma through lineage was something I resisted and still do sometimes because I want to do it myself. I want to figure these things out myself. And the answer is still right in front of me. So I feel grateful to be reminded of that. So thank you.
Thank you. I want to say the Red Room is also traditionally where Dharma transmission occurs at midnight. I also thought of Mission Impossible as you were talking to. Or Get Smart, the Cone of Silence. But thank you, Mike. So this resistance, yeah. Or, you know, we want to be like clean up the lineage so it looks nice and shiny. When it's a mess. People are people. And all this, all these teachers, even I'm not... recommending this, but you know, Richard Baker and his messiness also brings us here today, and because it was the messiness of the community that the community had to own. And speaking of lineage, in this, there are several stories of our great queer ancestor Tommy Eason Dorsey in here. And so I was like, boy, Michael, kind of, you know, with no fanfare, really, talks about these great stories with Eason. So anyway.
Wait, Nathan? Nathan online?
Oh, Nathan, welcome.
Good morning. I just had a little detail to share. Hogetsu, when you were talking about your past in the hardware store, which I had not heard before. What popped into my mind was many years ago, you brought in to a talk a poem by Pablo Neruda from Odes to Common Things. And it was a poem about, you know, the kinds of things you would find in a hardware store. And it kind of gave me a new understanding of your affinity for that poem, maybe. Just wanted to share that.
Thank you, Nathan. If you didn't remember that, I wouldn't have. And now you give me a new understanding of why I love that poem so much, Ode to Common Things. It's good to hear your voice. Howard.
You know, well, thank you for the talk. It was really funny because I forgot. I totally blanked it was Father's Day. So that's how much, you know, how close I am to my parents. It's funny, though. Like, I sat, you know, getting here today, I just found myself constantly, like, it kept coming up. Not ancestors specifically, like my direct ancestors, but, like, people who reflect my ancestors constantly coming up. And you showed up, too. I'm like, what the hell is happening here?
It's a mind meld.
Yeah. Like, why is all this coming up today? Not that it doesn't come up in general, but it, like, today it just flooded me. And it's, you mentioned that his father's name, like, well, damn it. But when you read the story, the koan, you know, free association time, I went straight to the brown robes and just robes in general. And like, I think one of the reasons why I end up like, well, I didn't start out this way, but I think one of the reasons why I ended up like sticking with Zen, as frustrating as it can be, is that like, oh, I can't run away from this. Like, you stare at a wall long enough, like, stuff comes up. There's something I'm reviewing right now. I'm not going to go into too much detail about it, but it's a lot of like collections of stories from like the first year of Tassajara. And there are a lot of really beautiful, tiny moments about Suzuki and Katagiri, actually. And there's this moment where somebody's like, what am I supposed to do on this cushion? Like, what happens? Like, I just stare at the wall and that's all I do. It's like, yeah. And many things will happen. And so, like, I think that's one of the reasons why, like, I keep turning to this practice over and over again, even with a lot of doubt, because I'm just like, I can't run away from myself, whatever that means. And that means having to grapple with things like lineage in the many different forms, mm-hmm. with having to put this on and wonder what it means for me to put this on.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing other people wear or not wear and wondering why they made the choices that they did and what lineages and ancestors they have that led them to make those choices. Yeah. I mean, I don't, just rambling at this point, but thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, there's one right here.
Perfect. Thank you for the talk. Yeah, and I don't have like super coherent sort of thoughts, but I like this idea of like encountering, you know, everyday life fully, right? Like, maybe I've been thinking about social media because I just read like a middle grade chapter book on like the effect, you know, the theme of the book is like the effect of social media on like, you know, 10, 11, 12 year olds and so forth. And you know, I think about like this need for like experience too, and not to be bored. And, I feel like it's very prevalent in our culture at the moment of like, just not willing, you know, unwillingness to sit still and kind of encounter reality, which I 100% understand, because it's like, I don't know that it's exceptionally difficult reality compared to any other time in history, but it feels difficult. And, you know, and also one thing that's been on my mind a little bit is like one of our precepts being sort of, being aware of like intoxication, right? Like, and I think you might've even mentioned, you know, like, and so, you know, like how to stay with reality, how to trust that it's like kind of enough, you know what I mean? Like that, and I appreciate about the Mel Weitzman piece of like, there is no sort of, divide between the ordinary and the sacred. I feel like that's a very powerful, like, that's kind of a reason why I'm here, I feel like, is, you know, that you don't have to go seeking some extraordinary experience, that you can, that really you can be here, trust it. Yeah, so I know that that's a lot of, like, sort of things kind of swirling around each other, but I guess it is just an appreciation of, like, and that element of trust and faith in like everyday life that it, yeah. And ordinary people too, right? Like that they are enough for you. I mean, I know that ordinary sounds weird, but I do feel like in our culture, sometimes it's like we're seeking like the extraordinary person, and I feel like we're kind of in a corner right now because that has been a tendency. Mm-hmm. And it's like the people in front of you are wonderful and full of like complex, all the complexity that you wish to see in other people, and including yourself too. It's like, so yeah, here's to us averages.
Ordinariness.
Ordinary. Yeah. I mean, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the stories told about Suzuki Roshi was just, he was ordinary.
Yeah.
And even some of the other, like, Japanese teachers were like, how'd this guy make it so big in America? He's no big deal here. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to work at being ordinary, because then you're like, oh, yeah, I got to look ordinary, you know. But see the gift and wonder in everything. You know, and now we're, of course, in a culture where you have to have the biggest military parade and the best and the, like, the superlatives. And you see where that leads. And just, you know. So the phone is always ringing, you know. It's just an ordinary phone. Anything else before we wrap up? Pat.
Yeah, thank you for your talk. And yeah, Bo, in your talking, I was reminded of lots of things, but it was sort of, it was connecting it with Hogetsu, what you were talking about with your father, of just meeting people where they are and just how important that is of, of just being present with what is. And I think like that's been part of my practice recently, is just not throwing concepts and ideas over direct experience and just trying to be open and present with everyone and everything. And it sort of was reminding me of like that line from the Genjo Koan where it's like too, I forget, I like always botch the Genjo Koan, but it's like, what is it? It's like to go out and experience myriad things is delusion, to allow myriad or to, yeah, to let myriad things actualize like yourself as enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just really love that. Like instead of going out into the world and feeling like your ego has to direct and manipulate and control things, just to kind of allow things to arrive as they are. And so, yeah, just feel grateful to be here and to sort of receive wisdom and teaching from everyone. So, thank you.
Thank you. It's a great joy to be able to share this burning world with everyone. And I really appreciate our dragon practice together. So much could be said, but enough for now. We'll just chant the four bodhisattva vows, and then I believe our Eno of the day, Wade, will make some announcements. Does that sound right? So I think I'm going to sign off from the visuals here. And thank you all very much. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true ordinariness of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless.
We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it.